Immigration is a contentious issue in our country, but unless you are a Native American, we are all immigrants and have stories of the challenges that our families faced in becoming American. Join the Museum of Boulder for an evening of theater and discussion with organizations working in Boulder County to assist immigrants. Learn about the work and how you can help our immigrant neighbors as they find their place in the fabric of our community. Presenting organizations include the ACLU of Colorado. For more on this and other events, or to put your event on the calendar, online at kgnu.org.
This program is supported by you, the KGNU listener member, and by the 17th Annual Moab Folk Festival, with support from the Utah Office of Tourism and featuring folk legend Judy Collins. 3 days of live folk and Americana music takes place November 1st through 3rd in the scenic Red Rock country of Moab, Utah. Tickets, lodging packages, complete lineup, and more available at moabfolkfestival.com. Support comes from Emporium Presents, featuring flamenco guitarist Jesse Cook at the Paramount Theater on November 6th. Tickets and info available at altitudetickets.com and the Pepsi Center box office.
This is KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Stay tuned for Metro.
Welcome to Metro Arts. I'm your host, Veronica Straitlingo. We've got a great show for you today. Coming up, Theater Company of Lafayette premieres their latest smash musical, Pippin, at the Mary Miller Theater tonight. I'll be speaking with actors Mike Martinkus, Rob Payo, and director Heather Frost about it. On Book Talk, host Diana Cordy speaks to pollster Stan Greenberg about his latest book, R.I.P. G.O.P., How the New America is Dooming the Republicans. On After Image, Boulder Weekly film critic Michael Casey makes a case for staying in with the brand new box set of Ida Lupino movies. All that plus the Metro Arts calendar coming up. But first, KGNU's Fall Fund Drive is heating up. You can be part of the U in KGNU by giving us a call right now at 303-449-4885. We've got copies of Stan Greenberg's latest book, which you will be hearing about later in this program. Or speak to our volunteers about any of the really great thank you gifts we have available for your contribution. KGNU is more than the voices you hear on the air. To me, over my 10-plus years of being a part of this station, it's meant a home to go to, that third place between work and play. Speaking for myself, I've always been that shy person in the corner, and KGNU has been that place for me to grow and find myself. But being a part of KGNU has become my opportunity to find new places beyond, that way to speak to new people and make growing connections in this community. It's a platform for people you'd never hear anywhere else because we aren't about what the market may or may not say is popular. KGNU gives voice to the voiceless, and that's because of our community who supports us, because of you. Give us a call at 303-449-4885 or go online to kgnu.org now and be part of our community. Up first on Metro Arts, Stories on Stage returns this weekend with a spooky offering. The show is called A Little Fright Music, and it'll be presented in collaboration with the Colorado Chamber Players. Thrill to Edgar Allan Poe's Mask of the Red Death and the hilarious P.G. Wodehouse classic Honeysuckle Cottage. Stories on Stage artistic director Anthony Powell stopped by to give us a little preview of this darkly funny story.
This is from Honeysuckle Cottage by P.G. Wodehouse. "McKinnon, thank God you've come," said James. "There's something I want to speak to you about. Do you remember my aunt, Leela J. Pinckney?" "Remember her," said McKinnon. "Why, I was Leela's literary agent for 25 years. "Of course. Then you know the sort of tripe she wrote?" "No author," said McKinnon, "who pulls down £20,000 a year writes tripe." All right, but when my aunt died, she left me £5,000 with the proviso that I live at Honeysuckle Cottage. McKinnon, do you believe in haunted houses?" "Of course not. Yet I tell you solemnly that Honeysuckle Cottage is haunted." "By your aunt?" said Mr. McKinnon, surprised. By her influence, there's a malignant spell over the place, a sort of miasma of cloying sentimentalism. Everybody who enters it succumbs. Listen, the new detective novel I'm writing, The Secret Nine, every time I sit down to work on it, a girl keeps trying to sneak in. Into the room? Into the story. Well, you don't want any love interest in your sort of book, said Mr. McKinnon, shaking his head. It only slows down the action. I know it does. And every day I have to keep shooing this infernal person out of the story. She's an awful girl, McKinnon, a soppy, soupy, treacly, drooping girl with a roguish smile. A roguish smile. This morning she tried to butt in on the scene where Lester Gage is being dropped into the pit of crocodiles. No, she did, I assure you, and that's not the worst. A week ago, a real girl was knocked down by a car right on my doorstep, and I've had to put her up, and every day I realize more clearly that sooner or later I shall ask her to marry me. Don't do it, said McKinnon. You're too young to marry. But all the same, I know I'm going to do it, said James. It's the influence of this ghastly house weighing upon me. I am being dragged down by a force too strong for me to resist. This morning I actually found myself kissing her dog, Rodman. I did, and I loathe the little beast. Yesterday I got up at dawn and plucked a nosegay of flowers for her, still wet with the dew. Dear God! It's a fact. I laid them at her door and went downstairs kicking myself all the way. Well, why don't you pack up and just leave this accursed place? If I do, I lose the £5,000. Ah, well, said McKinnon, there is that.
Anthony Powell, the artistic director for Stories on Stage, giving you a little preview of what you can catch this weekend with A Little Fright Music. This is being presented in collaboration with Colorado Chamber Players. It's happening tomorrow and Sunday. And with me to talk about it is both Anthony Powell and Abby Stutzman, the executive director of Stories on Stage. Guys, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
This is going to be such an exciting piece. Already we got a really wonderful preview of the mood that you'll be able to catch as part of this. But not only that, but this is in collaboration with the Colorado Chamber Players, so there's going to be a wonderful musical component with this piece. Can you tell us a bit about developing this?
Well, this show actually came to us from Mayor Trevathan, who's one of the actors in the show. She's going to be doing The Mask of the Red Death with music composed for the story by Caplet and the chamber orchestra playing with her. But she came and said, gosh, I really want to do this again with them. Is that something Stories on Stage would be interested in? And we haven't done a musical collaboration with a group for a long time, and it seemed like perfect timing. And we found the P.G. Wodehouse story, which is a comedy. So it's kind of a Halloween-y show, but funny and eerie.
And I've actually seen a bit of the Edgar Allan Poe Mask of the Red Death before, and oh my gosh, it is beyond creepy, and it is the coolest piece ever with the music. And it's also having a harpist. Emily Levin is the principal harpist with the Dallas Symphony. So she's coming in, and I think she's going to wow the audience.
Well, and with A Little Fright Music, we're bringing back a wonderful, time-honored convention of the scary story, the ghost story, which is going to be super exciting. That's coming up this weekend. Now, you will have shows in Boulder and in Denver.
That's correct. So this Saturday at 7:30, we'll be at the Nomad Playhouse in Boulder, and our Saturday shows on Sunday will be at 1:30 and 6:30 at Su Teatro.
Su Teatro is located in the Santa Fe Arts District.
Correct.
In Denver. For more information and tickets, where can people go?
People can go to our website at storiesonstage.org, or always feel free to give us a jingle at 303-494-0523.
We're speaking with Abby Stutzman, the executive director, and Anthony Powell, the artistic director of Stories on Stage. Guys, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Once again, for more information, you can go to storiesonstage.org. You're listening to Metro Arts on KGNU. Up next, Theater Company of Lafayette premieres their latest show, the ambitious and gripping musical classic Pippin, tonight. Rob Payo, who plays the leading player, Mike Martinkus, who plays Pippin, and Heather Frost, the director, stopped by the KGNU studio to talk about the show. Heather begins by describing what drew her to Pippin in the first place.
I've always loved the music from Pippin. It's timeless and it's classic. I've been singing it since I was a really small child, and it was on my bucket list to either be in it or direct it. There's a wonderful story that happens through Pippin, and it's the story of anybody's journey. This one happens to be set in the 900s with Pippin and Charlemagne and the court. And by the way, historically, it's completely inaccurate. However, the reality is that it is about a person's journey through life and walking through all the chaos that can happen externally and then finding purpose, always kind of reaching and finding where one can land with their life. And that's I think, a story that everybody can relate to.
The journey of Pippin, as it's conceived, is rather unique because the audience is invited into this entire experience. And Rob, that's where you come in as the leading player. Can you describe what the audience experiences when they walk into the Merry Miller?
Sure. So we're a troupe of performers. And so people are coming to a show within a show, basically. And we invite them in by singing the opening number, We've Got Magic to Do, which a lot of people know. And so there'll be lots of performers coming in. Some will be juggling, some will be doing flips and other things in a very small, intimate space. But I think that makes it even that much more special because it's, as Heather said, this is a story that people can relate to, but it's also a performance. And the lead player is there to make sure, as the ringleader, as the host, to make sure that we give them, the audience, the best show they've ever had.
And that demands a very intimate type of relationship with the audience as well.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, as the host, I'm constantly promising to the audience that, you know, something's coming up next and I'm introducing them to the characters. So I'm their narrator. I'm inviting them into the story and we go out into the audience and interact with them. And so in this small, intimate space, it's a shared experience.
Now, the story that you're inviting the audience to take part in is actually Pippin's story. Tell us a bit about Pippin, if you will.
Pippin, you know, he's introduced, he's just gotten home from college, and you know, he says, he has a line where he says, you know, he thanks all the scholars and the tutors, but you know, what I'm looking for can't be found in books. And so he states that his journey is not one that can simply be academic. It's got to be life. It's got to be experience. So, you know, his journey is finding this purpose. He says that he promises not to live an ordinary life or go after ordinary pursuits. He wants to live a life that's extraordinary, and he wants to find something completely fulfilling. So that's a continuing theme throughout the show of what is completely fulfilling and how is he going to find it.
One thing that Pippin is very well known for is this visual, beautiful spectacle. And I'm curious about marrying that spectacle with the intimacy that is the Merry Miller Theater.
You mean, how did we do it?
That's correct.
Well, the Merry Miller Theater, first of all, it seats about 75 people, so it's a very small theater. It's a converted church built. The building was built in the late 1800s. So we have no fly space and we have no wings. We have a very small backstage. So what I did was first of all, the original production was a miracle show. It was based on a miracle show and was presented very sort of vaudevillian. And then, of course, the revival is this big circus environment. So what I did was try to combine it the best I could in order to still get the big spectacle, which comes through the amazingly talented singers in my cast, as well as the phenomenal choreography that Lena Murphy, my choreographer, created. And then also adding just different elements here and there, the set design. I actually have elements of a tent inside of the Merry Miller, designed by Robert Janicek, a very creative individual. And we really looked at the space and maximized what we could do to honor the new elements that the revival puts forth. And honoring still, you know, the old sort of elements of the original production from the early 70s. So you'll just have to come and see it yourself.
We are speaking with Mike Martinkus, who plays Pippin, as well as Heather Frost, the director, and Rob Payo, the lead player. We're talking about Pippin, presented by Theater Company of Lafayette. It's going to be at the Merry Miller Theater. It premieres October 18th. It premieres tonight. It runs through November 9th. Shows will be Friday and Saturday nights at 7:30 and Sundays at 2. Folks, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Once again, you can find more information about Pippin at tclstage.org. This is KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Up next is After Image with Boulder Weekly film critic Michael Casey. Michael Casey, lots of stuff happening this weekend in Denver, but today you're going to make a case for why folks should stay in with a brand new box set from Aida Lupino.
Yeah, we talk a lot about what movies to go see in a theater and how great the theatrical experience is. And even though you can never replicate the seeing a movie on a big screen with in a dark room with a bunch of strangers, the fact is that not every theater is going to have the kind of program that you're looking for, or maybe the kind of movies that you're interested in. And this is why home viewing, whether it's streaming or whether it's Blu-rays or DVDs, is so integral to the whole cinematic experience. And the one I really want to turn you on to this week is the new Kino Lorber box set of four restored Aida Lupino films. The name of the set is Aida Lupino Filmmaker Collection. And she may not be a name that a lot of people know. She was an actress. That is probably how most people know her, opposite Bogart in High Sierra or in Roadhouse. She was never a femme fatale, but she definitely played a lot of bad girls. She was born in 1918 in London, and she worked her way to Hollywood first as a dancer, then as an actress. And she joked that she was a poor man's Betty Davis because she was known mainly for taking the roles that Betty Davis would turn down at Warner Brothers. And after a while, she got tired of being the actress who had to just kind of fill in someone else's shoes. So her and her husband, Collier Young, formed their own production company called The Filmmakers. And the idea was that they were going to develop scripts that no one else would touch with a 10-foot pole. These are like very socially conscious kind of films. The first one was about discarded unwed mothers and how society sees them as a blight. That movie is called Not Wanted. She then followed it up with a movie about polio called Never Fear, which she also she suffered from polio herself. She tackled rape and outrage in probably one of the most interesting movies to ever tackle the subject, Psychopathy and The Hitchhiker, which is the only noir ever directed by a woman during the noir cycle, and Adultery and The Bigamist. She also made Hard, Fast, and Beautiful, which is a tennis movie about a domineering mother. And these are, like I said, socially conscious kind of films. They definitely wear their message on their sleeve, but they're very earnest movies. They're shot very documentary-like. They are shot on the streets, not so much on sets. They're very low-budget movies, not a lot of main actors in here. Each one was made for about $160,000, which is about part and parcels for like these B movies. What's interesting about these movies is that you don't normally see these subjects made in Hollywood, and you definitely don't see them made by a woman. She is the second woman admitted into the Directors Guild of America. Dorothy Asner was the first. And she brings a sensitivity to the subject matters that you would not get from an A-list male director at the time. You don't get the kind of probing curiosity about the ramifications of how things work. The Hitchhiker is based on a real-life serial killer, and it predates movies like Badlands. It predates movies like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and stuff like this. Bigamy in the Bigamist is treated with this kind of empathetic quality rather than this like finger waving kind of how dare this man think he can pull this kind of con. And these are things that you don't normally see. And you haven't seen for a long time because these movies do get kind of buried. As many have said, that the film canon is sexist by omission and it is dismissive by its nature. And when I was writing about this for the Boulder Weekly, you can read more about this in this week's issue. It dawned on me that 10 years ago, a movie like Never Fear, which is about the effects of polio on this young dancer's life, wouldn't have the kind of prescience that it might now have, thanks to the rise of polio from anti-vaxxers. So these things do kind of come around again. These socially conscious films may seem dated in some aspects, but they are not dated in others. The four available in Kino Lorber set are Not Wanted, Never Fear, The Hitchhiker, and The Bigamist. All four of them have been really lovingly restored. They look gorgeous. They all come with four commentary tracks from film scholars that kind of fill in the gaps if you don't know the kind of context that these movies came out in. And it also has a really outstanding booklet written by Ronnie Shelb. This is a fantastic collection. You must seek it out. This is Aida Lupino, The Filmmaker Collection. It's available now from Kino Lorber wherever you get Blu-rays and DVDs.
Michael Casey, for more information about you, about your reviews, where can people go?
Go to boulderweekly.com and pick up the paper if you're in the county. It's free and independent every Thursday. I got a couple of articles in there this week, one on Aida Lupino, another one on an upcoming Asian cinema series going at the International Film Festival. Anything else? MichaelJCinema.com.
And you you can catch After Image right here on Metro Arts. Up next is Book Talk. In this edition, Diana Cordy speaks to pollster Stan Greenberg about his latest book, R.I.P. G.O.P., How the New America is Dooming the Republicans. And we have copies of this book available now for a pledge of $60 or more. Give us a call right now at 303-449-4885 to pledge. You can also go online to kgnu.org. Coming up next is Book Talk.
This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk. My guest is pollster Stan Greenberg, who's been an advisor to presidents, prime ministers, and CEOs around the world. And making for interesting dinner conversation, he's married to progressive U.S. Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro. Author of numerous books, Greenberg's newest title is R.I.P. G.O.P., How the New America is Dooming the Republicans. Welcome to our program.
Thank you. I am delighted to be there. Thank you for having me.
Does the Trump impeachment change what you say in your book?
I don't think so. I think it reinforces it. I think the country is so defined by Donald Trump, but his Tea Party-based battle, seizing control of the Republican Party and using it to the most extreme way possible. I think that anti-Trump reaction becomes a filter, for politics. I've never seen a moment where so much opinion is shaped, by that framework. And so I think the trajectory is hard to change. And it's why I've been so uncareful and brave in saying, rest in peace, GOP, how the new America is dooming the Republicans.
Well, back to your title, who's the new America?
Well, the new America is, when I first started writing about it, it had to do with, people of color, African Americans, and Hispanics, millennials, unmarried single women. America reached a point where a majority of households were unmarried. It's grown to include college-educated women and suburban women who are part of that majority that's looking for a progressive future. They've been defined by their hostility to a Republican Party, particularly since Barack Obama's election, which has battled to stop government from functioning, that saw in Barack Obama the first African-American president, and saw the coalition around him and believed that they would use government to benefit his own coalition, his own, diverse coalition, multicultural coalition. And the battle to against the changes that were produced by the New America produced a reaction against it. And that's why I think we're dealing with the kind of changes we had in 2018 and what I think will happen in 2020.
You talk about America's deep division, and you say this division cannot be sustained. Why is that?
And you're right to focus on that, because that's kind of the juncture. People keep thinking that the election is going to repeat the election before it. But every trend in the country is accelerating. The country is increasingly foreign-born, increasingly immigrant, increasingly diverse. Millennials are a increasing proportion, and along with Gen Z, proportion of the country. They'll be well over 40% of the electorate in 2024, not very long. So every trend, the country's becoming more secular. Every trend is accelerating. And what's in the Republican Party in fighting the new America and fighting the trends that are embodied in them has become increasingly virulent in a kind of life and death battle to keep that new America from governing. Again, it came to fruition with the battle against Barack Obama trying to stop government, suffocated government nationally at the state level. But the country has become increasingly polarized. Party identity has become increasingly identified with your accepting the values of the new America or opposing the new America. But the problem with that is you now have 48% of the country that are voting in Democratic primaries and only 39% were voting in Republican. In the 2018 election, Democrats won by 8.6%, 9 points in the 2018 election, in the highest turnout midterm election we've virtually ever had in the country. And so in a very engaged country where the demographic trends and increasing consciousness of values is producing a polarization that will marginalize the Republican Party. Because they're so associated with the opposition to these trends, you know, what happens the day after? What I ask in the book. You know, immigration has become kind of the centerpiece of this, you know, more than any other, you know, issue. You know, the heart of the Republican Party is the Tea Party. Evangelical is the biggest bloc, but the Tea Party is the one that led the revolt against Obama. It was a social movement, in the streets. They were the most anti-government, anti-Affordable Care Act, anti-Obamacare, and most anti-immigrant. And if you look at election after election over the last, since Obama, immigration has become the strongest correlation with voting for Democrats or Republicans. It's superseded race and class. Immigration views on immigrants, Mexican Americans in particular, have become the strongest correlates of voting. And so the Republican has become increasingly anti-immigrant party. Trump ran on it, won the nomination on it, because the Tea Party base and the evangelicals were the most anti-immigrant. He announced his candidacy, attacking immigrants, and that's what got him across the line. But he got across four elections after Democrats lost to Ronald Reagan in 1980 and 84. In 84, in a big landslide, we were divided internally. And eventually we did bring a lot of new people and change the party in very profound ways. But it's a very hard process, and they're going to have to go through a very hard process. And the key piece to get resolved is immigration. They're going to run the most ugly anti-immigrant campaign possible in 2020. You can't be an anti-immigrant party in America, as we'll see in 2020. The country has become so pro-immigration in reaction to Trump. You know, we've seen the numbers having a favorable view of immigration jump from 53%. 59% in January, 59% in July, to 69% in September. I mean, people are embracing immigration in reaction to Trump, and so they're going to be shattered by this. And so this is like a moment, like happened with the Whigs when they could not deal with, with slavery, and you had the Republican Party emerge, which then had Lincoln as their leader ultimately. That dealt with slavery and dealt with the kind of modern conflicts in the country.
You have said you missed calling the 2016 race like most pollsters. Now that we have about a year to go to the 2020 elections, here's the question you get all the time. How confident are you, 90%, 99%, that we'll have a blue wave election and a Democrat will win the White House?
I'm 95% confident, and I'm not sure what the other 5% is. But it's based on not just polling; it's based on history, big demographic trends. It's based on history. It's based on what's happening in real life.
No, that's good, Stan. I have one more question for you.
Okay.
What advice do you have to our listeners who doubt that anyone knows who's going to win the election next year? And worry that the 2020 election will be more like 2016 than 2018?
Good question. A good one to end one on, both on the book and also, what's happening with the election. I think the most important piece here is the American people. We've talked about the politicians. We've talked about change, shift in the polling and shift in the votes. But what is most important is what happened with the country, with people. But immigration is the most important. 69% say immigrants to the United States are positive. They have a warm attitude towards that. Half say very warm. They are saying to Trump, they say, we get it. We know what's happening. The more he has intensified what he's doing, the more the public has resisted and developed a consciousness that is embracing party and candidates that are going to bring the change that will push him out of office.
Well, thank you. My guest is Stan Greenberg, author of RIPGOP, How the New America is Dooming the Republicans, published by Thomas Dunn Books. This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk. Stan, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for doing it. I'm delighted.
And Book Talk is a regular feature right here on Metro Arts. Up next, the Metro Arts Calendar. This is the Metro Arts Calendar for the weekend of October 18th and beyond. For more information on these and other events, or to post your own, please go to kgnu.org. Evergreen Players presents the hilarious comedy Laughingstock at Center Stage in Evergreen tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30 and Sunday at 2. Frequent Flyers Aerial Dance Troupe presents their fundraiser A Fair in the Air at their dance studio in Boulder starting tomorrow afternoon at 5. And coming up next Tuesday, No Credits Productions will present a live reading of Black Radio Days at the Hamilton Theater at the Newman Center on the DU campus. That'll be Tuesday, the 22nd at 7 p.m. For more information on these and other events, or to post your own, please go to kgnu.org. That does it for Metro Arts. Thanks so much for listening. This is KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm Veronica Straitlingo. Stay tuned for the Laura Flanders Show.
You're listening to Community Radio KGNU. Stay tuned for the Laura Flanders Show.
This program is supported by you, the KGNU listener member, and by Save Home Heat Company, providing professional service and installation of heating, cooling, plumbing, and electrical systems, proudly serving the Boulder, Denver area for over 35 years. More information at savehomeheat.com.
Support comes from No Credits Productions, presenting The Tale of the Bullet, with musical guest 90s hip-hop legend Prince Poe, at the Newman Center's Hamilton Theater, October 22nd. A community conversation follows, featuring Tom Sullivan and others who have been impacted by gun violence. Tickets and information available at newmantix.com.
Hi, I'm Laura Flanders, and this is The Laura Flanders Show, the TV and radio program that seeks to raise radical spirits by interviewing forward-thinking people with real-life models of shifting power from the few to the many in the worlds of arts, entrepreneurship, and governance. The U.S. economy, weak or strong, is the question at the heart of the election, but it doesn't get to the reality, which is that whatever else it may be, the U.S. economy's not democratic or good for the planet. But it could be. Marjorie Kelly and Ted Howard of the Democracy Collaborative say how in their new book, The Making of a Democratic Economy. That's this week on The Laura Flanders Show, a place where the people who say it can't be done take a back seat to the people who are doing it. Welcome.
It's scary out there. From Putin's Russia to Trump's U.S., right-wing demagogues are riling people up around a sense that the system is broken or rigged. Polls suggest that 71% of Americans actually agree, leaving Democrats and liberals defending a status quo that's produced a level of inequality that's frankly pretty hard to defend. The authors of a new book agree that all sorts of systems are broken, from our economy to our democracy. But that's no reason for despair or fighting with our neighbors over the wreckage. New models are out there, and they just may be adding up to a new system. Marjorie Kelly and Ted Howard of the Democracy Collaborative are the co-authors of The Making of a Democratic Economy. Kelly's previous book on the divine right of capital helped inspire the B Corp movement. Howard's been deeply involved in the Evergreen Cooperatives in Cleveland and helped develop the community wealth-building model in Preston, England, the one we've reported on this show. I'm so glad to have you actually both here in studio. The last time I saw you, we were trekking around the mountains of the Basque country visiting the Mondragon Co-ops together.
Indeed.
About which people will see on this show in an upcoming episode.
Well, thanks, Laura. It's great to be here.
So congratulations first on the book. Let's start with the breakdown part. You say in it, this is a period of breakdown, but also deep redesign. How do you see it, Marjorie?
you know, we're told the economy's doing well, GDP is growing, the stock market's up, unemployment is low. But in fact, there's really two economies. 45% of jobs today are insecure. They're part-time, contract, Uberized type jobs. And that's the number we're not talking about. Wages have been stagnant for decades. And there are reasons for that. So, and that's what we talk about in the book, is that the economy is designed for the outcomes that we have, where three billionaires have more wealth than the bottom half of Americans.